First thing about angles would be to say, yes, use them. But what I mean by that is be intentional and use them to tell a story.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Hi, welcome to Motivation to Write. I am excited that you're here with me today. I have photographer Joe Edelman as a guest. So let's learn a little bit more about Joe. Joe Edelman is an award-winning Olympus visionary photographer and photo educator with a career spanning 5 decades. His stunning photography has been published internationally in Maxim, Cosmopolitan, Get Fit, Shape, and Good Light magazine. He has also completed assignments for the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times newspapers. In addition to hosting his podcast and YouTube channel, Joe is a frequent guest on This Week in Photo, Shutters Inc., Small Camera Big Picture, and the Photo Facts podcast. He is internationally recognized as an innovator in shaping the portfolios and careers of models. And I am very excited because I am here with Joe Edelman.
I got that. Got it. How are you, Ebony?
I'm doing great. And Joe, you don't know how nervous I was to even send you an email because you're so accomplished. Like when I looked at all of your resume, really, like New York Times, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's no way I can even send him.
That's what happens when you get to be old, unfortunately. I've been around the block, but hey, seriously, thank you. It's fun to be here, and I like to tell people I'm a guy that's still having fun. If you find something you love to do in life, it's never work. Best piece of advice I ever got.
That's so. Great advice, yeah. Yep. So, Joe, I took photography in high school, and I loved it. Cool. I didn't really do much with it after high school. But when I started blogging, you know, sometimes purchasing pictures off, like, I think it's iStock, I can't think of the website, it can get kind of pricey. And then some people, they can't commit to Canva because that can get pricey also. And there are moments where I'm thinking, I wish I just knew how, if I could just tap back into my high school days, knew how to take pictures for myself for my blog. Yep. So that's why you're here. But before we get into that, can we learn a little bit about your background? Like, how did you develop this passion for photography?
How did I get to here? So I'll try and condense it really into a smaller piece. I got my first camera when I was 11 years old, and I bought it myself. Really just to irritate my mother, honestly. I had a deal where every Christmas, instead of getting a bunch of toys, you know, I was a mature kid. They would let me spend about $100 and I could pick something, you know, that I wanted. One year it was a record player or whatever. And the Christmas catalog came in the mail and I saw these cameras, and I always wanted to play with my parents' movie camera, but they never let me touch it. And I found this German camera. In fact, I still have the camera. There's a German camera called a Hanamex Praktika. It's a 35mm film camera. And at the time, it was $75.
Wow.
So this was within my budget. So I run into my mother with a catalog. It's like, here it is. This is what I want. This was the day the catalog arrived. And like, didn't take her a split second. She's like, nope, definitely not. I'm like, why? You can't do that, right? It's within the guidelines. So I thought, all right, Dad'll square this one away. So I went to Dad when he got home from work, and Dad's like, no, not happening. And I threw a holy fit. And finally, my father, in his infinite wisdom, he says, you know, you've got a savings account and you've been saving like little mini motorcycles. They call them mini bikes back then, were like the rage. And I wanted one. So I was saving to get one.
Yeah.
It's like, you've got the money in the bank if you want it that bad. So the next day, I took my bank book. This was, you know, back where the days where you actually had the little book that they stamped. And I went to the bank. And I took my money out and I went to a camera store and I bought it. And I was honestly, I was hooked on the first roll of film.
Wow.
But I really got hooked when I was 14 then, and I had my first picture published in a newspaper. Came home from school, saw the picture. And of course, underneath the picture was my name, photo by Joe Edelman.
Right.
That's it. sold. And
oh my gosh.
You know, photography for me, it's just honestly, it's been a way to experience life and people and see things and do things. So
yeah. And I think that's what really drew me to photography was I love stories. I've always loved stories. I love reading as a kid and I love film. And so the pictures, photographs just have a way of telling a story, even if it's just like one image that you're capturing. And I think that's why I found it so fascinating. So let's start talking about like when we take, well, first of all, can I take quality pictures with the phone or should I invest in a real camera?
Absolutely. So full disclosure, I am an ambassador for a camera company. So I can get in trouble for being this honest, but I'm always this honest. And that is, the best camera that you have to work with at any point in time is literally the one that you have in your hands.
Okay.
And the point is, I say it that way for two reasons. One, as entrepreneurs and creatives, we all have a tendency sometimes to procrastinate because of things we don't have. And those things we don't have become an excuse for actually not failing.
Right.
So the best thing to do, period, is dive in and go for it. We are at a point, fortunately, with technology that smartphones take amazing pictures, like absolutely amazing pictures. But at the end of the day, the device, whether it's a phone, whether it's a camera, it's only as good as the person using it. And it's not so much that you have to know a lot about photography. Certainly, it doesn't hurt to know some things about photography, but it's really more about really paying attention to the details. Okay. You know, if you think back of any image, when you think like iconic images that come to mind where you're like, oh my God, that is such an amazing picture and everybody knows that.
Right.
There is something about that picture, whether it's a moment, whether it's an element, whether it's a detail that simply just kind of grabs you by the ears and won't let you look away.
Right. Yeah.
And immediately when you see that picture, you are drawn to that element.
Right.
That's really kind of the key to making your pictures work. You know, so if you're shooting products or you're shooting people or whatever you're shooting, it's really paying attention to the details. Only include the things that are important and make sure not to show things that aren't important because they're likely going to be a distraction.
Right. Okay.
And that's where the picture kind of loses its impact. And in today's world, where we have social media and YouTube and we see so many more pictures than we did pre-internet days, there's a lot more noise, so to speak.
Right.
So, you know, your pictures, especially if you're an entrepreneur or a blogger or an influencer, your pictures are competing more for attention.
Right.
And so really the biggest piece of that is it's the details. Make sure that when somebody looks at your picture, it's really obvious, not to you, you took it, to them. What are you trying to communicate or to say or to show? That's what you're really working towards.
Okay, so this is interesting because I was just talking, I'm an English teacher and I was talking with my students about, they're 11th grade. So the stuff that we're reading and studying aligns with US history. And so there's this section on iconic photographs. And I asked them, well, what are some like iconic photos that you guys can just think of from your US history course? The one I always think of, I don't even know the name of it. I can never think of the name of this photo, but it's from the Great Depression. It's a mother. She has her two children on the side of her, and they're looking very, she's looking very sad.
If I'm not mistaken, it's a very famous photo by a photographer named Edward Steichen, and it's actually from Ellis Island. It's the immigrants coming.
Oh, is that? Yes. Okay, yeah. It's from the 30s, though. Is it from the 30s? I think it's
Actually, I think it might be a little bit before that, to be honest. I'm not positive on the history, so don't quote me, but it might actually be a little bit before that.
But the focus is the expression on their faces, it seems.
Absolutely.
And I know that when we take photographs, when the kids take photographs, because I also used to be the yearbook teacher, I would just look at the photographs and I'd ask, like, what am I supposed to be looking at? Because there's so much happening in the photo. And sometimes it's hard to find that essential element, as you mentioned.
Sure.
And what to focus on. So if we take a photo, how do we figure out what to focus on?
Well, I mean, so the easy answer is you focus on your subject. That's not really that helpful, though, obviously, right? So the challenge is there's a disconnect in the human brain between the way our brain works and what a mechanical device, meaning a camera, is able to record. So a camera, depending on what lens you have on it, depending on what camera, it records a field of view. Mm-hmm. And every time you press the button, it's going to record that same degree of view.
Okay.
The challenge with our eyes have the added benefit of our brains. Meaning, you know, our eyes, basically, if you have decent eyesight, you've got this very wide peripheral vision. So now I'm going to go a little science geeky on you, but your listeners and your viewers can actually Google these terms. So the interesting piece of it is we think that we see all of this. Mm-hmm. Actually, we don't. The information that our brains get from our eyes, it's this thing called the foveal view. So you can actually, to see how little information your eyes actually give to your brain, if you hold your hands out in front of you, arm's length, and you make a C shape like that with your fingers separated,
mm-hmm.
and look through that C shape. But now pay attention to everything that's around the outside of that C shape. So what's happening in your brain, the only thing that your brain sees in focus and in color is what's inside that C shape.
Huh.
Everything else is blurry in black and white. So our eyes and our brain, well, our eyes scan and our brain builds an image and we see things. But our brain also helps us process what are we really focusing on and what are we really wanting to pay attention to. And we kind of ignore all the other stuff. And it's actually kind of easy to ignore it because we can be selective with where the brain is collecting the most data.
Huh.
By the way, full disclosure, I'm not this smart. My wife is a cognitive psychologist. She studies how the brain works. Fortunately for me, she's not a clinical psychologist. I'd be in a straitjacket. So anyway, so the problem is, like, when we see something, we say, oh, we want a picture of that. It's really easy for us in our minds to focus on just that object. But then we pick up the camera. And even when we're looking through the camera, we still kind of just pay attention to that object. And we start to ignore all the other things. The best example, everybody's done it. Even the best photographers in the world have done it. The classic picture where you photograph a friend or a spouse or a relative or anybody, and you go home and you look at the picture and you're like, oh my God, there's a telephone pole growing out of the back of your head. Obviously that pole was there when you took the picture, right?
Yeah.
But we didn't notice it. So that's actually something called inattentional blindness. And it happens simply because we were interacting with the subject. We were paying attention to the subject.
Right.
And that pole didn't really impact the emotion or thoughts or the feelings that we were, you know, seeing or feeling about our subject. So we just didn't even notice it, even though it was staring us in the face.
Right.
So yeah. What actually does make photography a challenge is teaching your brain to see the details. When you're looking through a camera lens or when you're looking at the screen of your smartphone, so that you're able to evaluate the whole picture that's in front of you and say, oh, you know what? I need to move that thing out of the background, or I need to change my angle a little bit so that I don't have that pole
right.
you know, in the background. It takes practice. There's no YouTube video. There's no book. That's just practice.
Yeah. And so that's what I was going to mention, that because it sounds like you have to take multiple pictures. I mean, you can't just think you're going to get it on the first go round, right?
Yep. Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if I do a portrait of someone, it's not, in fact, actually, I'll own this. I just shot a new headshot for myself this past week.
Okay.
I shot close to 500 frames.
Wow.
Now I joke, part of it is, you know, look what I had to work with. Not a whole lot to go in there, but really what it comes down to, it's a little bit of that. You know, I want it to look better because let's face it, when somebody wants a portrait, they don't want a picture of what they really look like. They want a picture of themselves, like on their best day, times 10, right? That's what we all want.
Yeah.
So part of it is, you know, getting the right expression, experimenting a little bit. Even though it was a portrait, I changed the camera angles from time to time. I adjusted my lighting a little bit to see what might look a little bit better. The way I look at it, any photograph that's worth taking is worth trying different things with. I never, even after all these years, I never assume that I've got the best idea when I pick up the camera. I assume that I have an idea and that the best idea is yet to be found. And to do that, I need to look through the camera and start trying different things.
Okay. So you mentioned different angles and lighting.
So like, can we talk about lighting? Because I think lighting is very important. It's something that, you know, amateur photographers don't think about. How do we manipulate the lighting, or what's like a simple thing we can do to get the lighting correct?
So number one, you're absolutely right. Aside from seeing the details, next most important thing, hands down, is lighting. If you don't have good light, not only is it not flattering to your subject, and that I'm not necessarily referring to people, it could be anything.
Right.
So if you don't have good light, it's not flattering to your subject. And it also will tend to reduce the quality of your photo, especially with a smartphone. Hmm. So that being said, I'll admit, when I'm in my studio and I'm doing some of the crazy beauty and fashion portraits that I do, I'll go crazy with light. But the portrait that I just took of myself, I did with one light. Very simple.
Huh.
So for people that don't have a lot of background in photography but want to kind of be able to up their game,
mm-hmm.
I would recommend, I've had to change it to be a little bit more politically correct in these days, but we used to refer to it as Kiss It. It used to be Keep It Simple, Stupid. Now super simple, right? Okay. But honestly, simple is better. So what that would mean would be, for instance, try to work near a window. In fact, in the YouTube generation and influencers, beauty vloggers, of course, all learn this. It's like, hey, if you don't have lots of lights, make sure you're looking out a window and you're going to have this great light. And they're right. It's beautiful light.
Right.
So even if you had to photograph a simple product sitting on a table, if you can move that table close to a window, north facing windows are always better, but not a requirement. North facing windows are good because a north facing window never gets direct sunlight in the window.
Okay.
So even on a bright sunny day, if you decide, hey, I want to take my picture at 10 o'clock or 1 p.m., you're still going to have the same light coming through the window.
Right.
Whereas if you have an east, south, or west facing window, there will be times of the day where you're going to have just direct sunlight. So you maybe have to watch your timing. But if you can get close to a window, and then one of the easiest things you can do to kind of maybe soften the light or even be able to fill light in where there's shadows a little bit, mm-hmm. is you go to a dollar store. You don't have to go to a camera store. You don't have to spend a lot of money. Go to a dollar store, and obviously for $1, you buy a 20-inch by 30-inch piece of white foam board in the arts and crafts section. Not the poster board, because it's a little too flimsy. So you want the foam board that's about an eighth of an inch thick, right? Right,
yeah.
That stuff makes the greatest reflector in the world. And you can use that for photographing a product. So if you've got a window here with, nice, and compared to a product or an item, or if you're trying to do like a lay flat arrangement on a table, you're going to have this nice soft light coming in, but the shadows may still be a little bit harsh on the other side.
Yeah.
If you put that white piece of foam board on the other side, it's going to soften those shadows. It won't take them away. And you don't really want the shadows to completely go away, because then it starts to look a little unnatural.
Right.
So, but it's going to soften them enough that the lighting will actually be very nice and very pretty. If you're doing something where maybe you've got one part of your scene and you want to be able to just reflect a little bit of light into that one part of the scene, and I'm talking like tabletop things, smaller things.
Okay.
Go to an arts and crafts store and go to the section where they have the display cases for little dolls.
Hmm.
And they sell little round pieces of mirror.
Yeah.
Very inexpensively, right? Mm-hmm. You get a couple of those, and you can use that to basically reflect light back into a piece of your scene if you're photographing a product or a setup. So really, the key with lighting, similar to what I said in general, it's paying attention to the details.
Yeah.
But understand that every time you add another light to your picture, you're actually making your task a little bit harder. Because there's more light to manage, there's more shadows to worry about.
Right.
So the less light that you can, I should say the fewer number of light sources that you can use, the easier your job's going to be. And windows are the best. If you're working outside, if you have to go photograph a person outside, if at all possible, try and do it on a cloudy day. The lighting is always soft. Mm-hmm. The lighting is always even, okay?
Okay.
If you're worried about the person's eyes not looking vibrant and punchy on an overcast day, have them look up slightly. They don't have to look way up at the sky. but have them look up slightly. And now those nice bright clouds are going to put lots of color and detail into the eye. Certainly if the person's maybe taller than you and they're looking down at you, well, yes, then their eyes are going to be really deep set and dark because it will create shadows.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, if they're taller than you and you're short, maybe you have to stand on a step stool or find something to stand on. But if you have them look up slightly, you get really, really nice light. On a bright sunny day, if you need to do the same thing, find shade. Get your subject in the shade. If you imagine, even on the side of a building, in an alley, it could be bright and sunny outside, but if you can get your subject in the shade, and so imagine you're standing in the sun, so they're looking out towards the sun, there's all this really bright light that lights them up, but it's not harsh light that's hitting them and creating shadows. It's soft, and it's even, and it's really very flattering.
Okay, so let's go back indoors, because I just want to point something out with the windows.
Yeah.
So the windows should be... The window should not be behind your subject, right? Because it seems like you're backlighting.
Correct. Right. If you put the window behind your subject, you're going to basically get a silhouette. Or if you try to compensate for the lighting, you're going to wind up getting almost kind of like a ghosty type image because the light outside the window is going to be so bright.
Right. Yeah.
It starts to kind of create a flare around your subject, which if you're trying to do something creative, maybe that's interesting.
Right.
But yes, generally the idea would be you would place yourself, just like you see the beauty vloggers do, they'll place their camera basically right at the window looking in, and then they're sitting at the window looking out.
Right.
And so they've got this really nice light. Same type of idea.
Okay, yeah. And then when you're outside, you mentioned shade if it's very bright. You don't, what you don't want for sure is to stand where the sun is directly hitting you. Is that
You don't want the sun directly hitting your subject, right? Because you're going to have two things that are going to happen. One, you'll have very, very harsh light, strong shadows, harsh light. Two, your subject's very likely going to be squinting because it's really bright.
Okay, yeah, okay.
So if you get them in the softer light, it's going to look, you know, much more flattering. The light's going to be much more even, but it's still coming from above. So you'll have shadows, but they'll be softer, more natural.
Okay. And then glasses. So how the reflection, like I have this problem all the time if I'm taking a selfie.
I can see
myself in my glasses. How do you manage that?
Well, so there's a couple things. As far as from a photographer standpoint, generally you want to have the light a little bit above where your subject is looking. So if I'm looking at you into the camera, to have the lights here, pretty much guaranteed I'm going to have reflections. If I have the lights up here and coming down, I'm not going to get reflections.
Okay.
Now, there's a couple caveats there. Caveat number one is if it's a really harsh light, not a soft light, but like a direct light and it's up, you have to be very careful because you can create shadows from the glasses frames that kind of cut through your eyes.
Yeah.
So with glasses, it's better to have a softer light source.
Okay.
Especially in today's world, fortunately, as technology is getting better, most eyeglasses now, when you purchase glasses, it used to be you had to pay a lot extra for it, but a lot of companies now, it's an automatic thing. They have the non-glare lenses, which don't eliminate reflections entirely, but they dramatically reduce the reflections. So that also kind of helps a little bit.
Okay.
If neither of those, you know, scenarios are an option, try to create a situation where maybe you're going for lighting that's a little bit more dramatic. So kind of just like I have, you would want the lighting on the side. So most of the light is on one side of the face. And that way, you know, if I turn to the light a little bit, now you're going to start to pick up a reflection on the glasses. Fortunately, these are non-glare, so it's not dramatic, but you can tell there's a light there.
Yeah.
So if you move the light off to the side a little bit, that's going to help also. Some of the old school tricks, which you have to be really careful of. In fact, I have a video on my YouTube channel about photographing people with glasses. One of the tricks I learned when I was younger, and I did it for years, and never really paying attention to the fact that frequently when I did it, my subjects actually looked like they felt uncomfortable. So what they used to teach photographers is to take the glasses and tip them down like that. So for the most part, you can't tell that the glasses are tipped down,
Right.
And this way, you're not going to get reflection from lights that are right here because the lenses are pointing this way. It really depends on your subject, whether or not you can get away with it, mainly because it feels weird when you're doing that. Like yeah. you wear glasses, if you tip yeah. your glasses, it just feels awkward. So if you can't keep your subject relaxed, that's going to be a problem. The other thing that you have to worry about, if I were to do it with these glasses, since they're fairly narrow, tipping them puts the frame right through my eye. And we don't want that.
Right.
So now like your glasses are a little bit bigger. We could get away with tipping yours and we wouldn't notice it as much. But you gotta put them all the way up and then tip them. So basically you're gonna take the arms and push the arms up in the back.
I'm trying to
And you're gonna see it feels really awkward. There you go. That's great. They look great on camera, right? So it's a trick that you can get away with, but it's just, it feels awkward and you got to get it just right. Cause see, like your first inclination was, well, slide them down. Then it just looks like they're sliding down. Right.
Got it sliding down now, actually. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So let's talk about angles. Cause angles are important too. I know that, you know, high angle versus low angle that it gets a different feel, drama.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, so, my first thing about angles would be to say, yes, use them. But what I mean by that is be intentional and use them to tell a story. So probably one of the better examples I would give you is a person that's not paying attention and they're photographing maybe a landscape, like a lake, okay? And you see the finished picture and the horizon line is kind of like that.
Hmm.
That's just holding the camera crooked. It's sloppy, right? And it does detract from the picture. But if we saw a picture of that lake and it was kind of like, woo, really crazy, and there was an interesting reflection, well, then we could argue, okay, that's kind of artistic.
Right.
So I'm a big proponent of the idea, hey, if you're going to tilt the camera, make a statement. Yeah. But where angles really become helpful is realizing that the difference between even just looking at a person, if we're photographing a portrait or even an environmental portrait where somebody is maybe at a desk working. If we shoot from a slightly lower angle and we look up at them, we're putting that person in a position of power, authority.
Yeah.
If we look down on them, it could be construed several different ways. It could be truly looking down on them, putting them in a diminutive position. It could actually be somewhat flirtatious. Unfortunately, I'm old enough. Back in the day, when I learned to shoot portraits for the first time, we were taught two very strict rules, and I would not encourage anybody to follow these rules today. But back then it was, if you're photographing a man, you photograph slightly below the face and look up. If you're photographing a woman, you photograph slightly above the face and look down.
Mm.
Obviously that is not ideal in today's world. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
So for me, my starting point, male or female in a portrait, just a regular portrait, is usually going to be just below the eyes. Now I will say that if I'm doing maybe like a glamour type picture or something that's meant to be maybe like boudoir or sexy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole different ballgame. Then shooting down on somebody, they're looking up. It puts white space under the pupils of the eyes and it makes the eyes look bigger. So it has a little bit of a different connotation, but indeed it's telling a different story.
Right.
Same even if you're photographing a building, if you are looking for something where it's an accurate representation of the building, well, then your challenge is you want to try and keep your camera perfectly straight because the building's straight. If you tilt your camera, the building's going to start to keystone and go like that, which is not good if we want it to be an accurate representation.
Right.
But if we're doing something that is meant to show this building as huge and give it a dramatic feel, well, then to shoot very low and aim the camera way up makes the building seem even bigger, even more imposing.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So if you're taking a picture of something or someone, whatever your subject is, and you want that photograph to convey power, the lower angle is always the better.
Absolutely. Choice. Right. And how low your angle is going to be, and this is something you can see even just by taking a simple kind of test shot, how low the angle should be is really going to depend upon what are you trying to say. So one of the pieces of advice I give to every photographer starting out, and this applies to pretty much everything you do in photography, always know why. Why are you taking the picture?
Yeah.
right? So even if it's a product, why are you photographing it? Because I want to sell it. Okay, what are the selling features? Obviously, I should make sure those features are prominent in the picture, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm photographing a person and or somebody comes to me and says, hey, I need a portrait. My first question is, why? What do you want the portrait for? Is it going to be a business scenario where you're going to put it on LinkedIn and your resume and try and get a job? Or is it going to be a portrait that you want to give to your boyfriend or spouse or significant other? Or is it more of a traditional portrait that you want to have it printed really big and framed and hang it on the wall above the fireplace, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Every one of those scenarios really is going to be photographed kind of differently. Mm-hmm. And so by having that piece of information, let's just say it is a business portrait. Well, now I know, okay, this woman is a C-level executive at a company. So this is a woman who is usually in a management position. Maybe she's going to be applying for an even bigger job, et cetera. Well, we certainly do not want to do anything that makes her look small or anything that doesn't make her look like she's in charge. But at the same time, we have to be aware as we start to get lower, we have to be aware that if we get too low, then we're almost kind of turning her into a caricature of sorts.
Right, yeah.
But the flip side of that, she gets the job, and it's a big, high-profile job, and a magazine calls us and says, hey, we're going to do a feature story about this woman just becoming the new CEO of Apple. That's powerful. Yeah. That's big. So then, to go with a lower angle and maybe have, you know, the Apple headquarters behind her.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, kind of looming over. Then, indeed, we are kind of showing her as the boss of all of this.
Right, yeah.
So the picture tells a different story.
Yeah, okay.
That's, angles are okay. Great tools to use. Great tools.
Right. So because while you were talking, I was thinking you really want to know what the purpose, like what do you want your audience to do, think, or feel when they look at your photograph? Or what story is this photograph telling? Yep. Essentially
always
every story.
Always know your why.
Exactly. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, that's great. Okay. So as we're I can't believe it's already like, do you have any like other just DIY tips,
right,
that you want to share? Maybe,
DIY tips that I could share. I mean, honestly, I think if most of your audience, it sounds like they are, you know, entrepreneurs and bloggers and content creators.
Yeah.
I guess not really so much DIY, but really it would be a reassurance.
Hmm.
You don't have to have the most expensive equipment.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I'm sure that you know, and I'm sure you've probably talked about and some of your other guests have talked about, even from the standpoint of doing what you and I are doing right now,
right.
It's more important to be real and be sincere.
Right.
And, you know, so I think what happens with a lot of people, they think, well, this phone's not going to get the job done, or, I don't really know that much about photography. So if I get the best, absolute best camera, like it's going to get me what I need to do. Mm. Kind of like my $1 reflector.
Right.
I would point out to people, realize that you don't have to spend, you know, tons of money mm-hmm. to, you know, have all the things you need. I can give you one example, especially since we're talking about bloggers and things like that who may have to photograph small things.
Yeah.
It's very popular now. I see them on Facebook all the time when I'm scrolling through ads for several companies that have created these like 2-foot by 2-foot patterned backgrounds. So it could be like bricks or mm-hmm. it could be like wood grain. Okay. And so you could buy several of these and you have all these kind of different backgrounds to use. And they're like 2-foot by 2-foot square, which is a brilliant idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But they sell them for like $100 each, which every time I see it, I'm like, oh my God, people pay that. Why?
Where do they buy them from?
Well, frequently they're made out of plastic. So they are durable, other than that. But here's the thing. If you want some backgrounds like that, go to Home Depot or Lowe's.
Yeah.
And go to the tile section, go to the flooring section, and you buy a couple pieces of flooring or a couple tiles, and you got the same size background for like $12, right? Buying, you know, the sample pieces out of a box, the open pieces. What I do when I'm looking for stuff like that, I'll go to Home Depot and I'll go to the clearance section, which are all the open box pieces where, you know, the box has been dropped and half the tiles were broken, but there's 4 tiles left, right?
Right, yeah.
Got a markdown and clearance. It's like, perfect. I'll take those four and just, you know, put them together, make a setup for my background. Boom, good to go. So, you know, the whole key to creativity and as an entrepreneur, even as a teacher, I'm sure you understand this. People tend to think, you know, creative, artsy, not even
close. Right. Yeah.
Steve Jobs said it best. It's about connecting the dots. Creativity, it's problem solving.
Mm.
So my DIY tip would be to realize that your best solutions don't have to cost you a lot of money.
Mm.
So I would advise people, and it's not about being cheap. It's about being practical. Right. I would advise people, anytime you think you need a piece of gear, at least make sure you're going out of your way to see if you can find another solution before you go and pony up that money.
Okay.
This is probably another solution that's available. Right. And I will tell you, on my YouTube channel, I do a lot of DIY videos for photography things, reflectors, lights, all kinds of things like that. I'm all about not having, and part of the reason why I do that, it's not that I'm cheap. My wife wishes I was cheaper. part of the reason why I do it is that, you know, like when we talk about backgrounds and things like that, well, once you have that background, it's cool. The first time you use it, it's kind of cool. The second time you use it, you get the third or fourth time you use it. It's like, I've been there, done that. Well, that gets expensive really quick if you just keep buying new backgrounds all the time, right? So for me, I'm always looking for ways, like, how can I come up with something that's different? And better yet, if I DIY it, there's probably no other pictures with that background.
Right.
I can kind of make it my own.
Yeah.
In that sense, it's not been done before. So.
That's such great advice, Joe. Thank you so much. Wow.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Joe, tell us where we can find you.
Best place to start is my website. So it's www.joeedelman.com. And then from there, you'll find links to my YouTube channel, my Instagram, all that good stuff, my podcast, all of it's there.
Yes. You have an amazing website. I mean, everything you do
and
your photographs, they're just so beautiful. Good grief.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I really do.
I am so happy to have had Joe as a guest. I love photography and I love the notion and the idea of photographs telling pictures because that's what they do. And that's why we take them and that's why we use them on our websites and blogs. Yes, I took photography in high school. I think I mentioned that in the interview, but I'm kind of dating myself. When I took photography in high school, we used cameras that you had to, the type of camera where you had to look down into the camera to take the photograph, and then you process the photograph in like three different solutions in a dark room, and it was so much fun. I don't think they still do that today, but I just cherish those memories because it was like, I felt so creative in that dark room, and I felt very creative behind the camera, and my mother still has portraits that I took in high school hanging on her wall. They're in black and white. It's wonderful. Anyways, so make sure you follow Joe on YouTube and his social media, and visit his website. It's amazing. He has some amazing tips and tutorials and photographs, beautiful photographs. And also visit my website this weekend for my big takeaways from my conversation with Joe. I'm featuring a new section on my blog called Essays, and it's where I will share some of my personal essays. And I have one up already. It's called Pancakes. So check it out and enjoy. That's it for this week. Tune in next week when I have another fabulous conversation with a fabulous guest. You can follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter at Ebony Haywood, and you can follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Motivation to Write. Have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for your time today. Okay, bye-bye.